Welcome back to the Stoplight Approach podcast, where brain science is made simple. I am your host, Sarah Ganker. Today on the podcast, we are continuing our discussion of the book Signals, and we are discussing chapter 6, which is a chapter about staying in green, planning for how to stay in green. And here to discuss the chapter today is my husband, Tim. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So this chapter started with just the acknowledgement that we all get into red situations, really scary things happen, you know, things that we don't know how to handle. They just happen in life. And, you know, we need to kind of have a plan. We need to know how to respond in those situations. And one thing that I really loved about the very beginning of the chapter is that she acknowledged that some of us just live in red situations. She gives examples like someone being diagnosed with cancer, or living with someone who has special needs, and just that being an ongoing kind of challenge in life. Those are just a couple of examples, but I really loved that she acknowledged that there are just kind of lives that are just a constant red situation, and that even when we're living those kind of like red situation lives, it's still possible to develop a way to keep ourselves in green. And so she comes up with this kind of list of you know, ways to kind of simplify and redefine success and when living in red. So the first one she talked about was stop. When you're red means stop. When you're living in red, you have to stop. So can you talk a little bit about kind of what stood out to you about that, or, you know, what it made you think of when you read stop?
Yeah, I think that this is one of the particular in terms of a plan that feels really counterintuitive. Normally when you make a plan, you're doing action. You're going about trying to make something happen, accomplishing a goal or something in that kind of ilk. But stopping doesn't really sound like it's going to help you do something, especially when there's some type of behavior, there's some type of situation, there's something going on that you need to do some type of intervention, you need to do some type of parenting or engagement with. And so I think stop feels really different, not only counterintuitive, but I think also it goes against what a lot of other parenting books out there would say to do in a given situation. And yet I think it's incredibly important. I found it incredibly helpful in my life, whether I'm in a red situation or I'm quickly moving towards being in red, is stopping allows me to actually better approach the situation when I'm in a green brain rather than trying to fix whatever situation when I'm in red. And I think that one of the big things is we always want to immediately respond. And there is a sense that if there's like physical danger, want to make sure people are safe. At the same time, in the moment when we're in red is probably when we are going to be least effective in actually helping work through the situation.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when I first read Stop, it reminded me of our discussion a couple weeks ago when we talked about responding versus reacting. And yeah, I feel like you almost, in order to respond, like think of what you actually want to say, how you actually want to handle the situation, it requires that moment of pause. Because otherwise, you're going to just sort of immediately react with whatever comes naturally. And we, you know, we talked about how often we parent the way we weren't parented, and we just kind of, it's like a knee-jerk reaction that we have versus taking that pause, taking that stop and saying, okay, how do I actually want to respond in this situation? She also talks about this phenomenon of name it red. And she quotes Dr. Daniel Siegel, who has this phrase, name it to tame it. So the idea is that if you can name your emotions, then you can tame them. You can, neurologically speaking, what it does is is it activates the green brain. It activates the prefrontal cortex to use language to talk about how you're feeling. And so your feelings may be in, maybe happening in yellow or red, but by naming them, it activates the prefrontal cortex, the green brain. But I know that naming things is hard for people sometimes. Maybe even recognizing emotions is hard for people sometimes. And I was going to see if you could share your experience with that and ways that you've learned to kind of pay attention to those things within yourself.
Yeah, for me, naming it is hard. I think mostly because what I've realized about myself is that I can have a really difficult time identifying my emotions, exactly what I'm feeling, how I'm feeling it, what the root cause of those things are. And so for me, what I've recognized is I actually feel physically in my body that I've recognized now are signs that I'm escalating towards red really quickly. And that's been really helpful for me, because as I've been able to go back and actually look at the situation and understand the situation better, I can then say, oh, okay, this physical feeling is me going towards red. So that really allows me to name it. Now, that naming it for me really begins when I'm in green, when I can actually go back and look at what's going on. But then that allows me to actually understand it then when I'm in red. And so for me, for instance, is I can feel my muscles tensing. And I've recognized that as that's my anger in a situation really going. That means I'm moving really quickly towards red. And so I've found that when I start to feel that, that's my immediate need to stop. Because I need to control that impulse of moving towards red in that situation. And physically, I feel that more than emotionally or mentally. And that's helped me a lot in terms of understanding how I deal with the situation and can then make a plan and procedure to help me stay in green.
Yeah, I think it's, so helpful to, like you said, recognize that often, we don't recognize the emotion, but we can recognize our body responses. And if we can pay attention to those, even like you said, if it's in a moment of reflection after the fact, when we're in green, we can kind of reflect back and say, okay, what happened? What signals, was my body or brain alerting me to? I think that's so important. And it's a little bit like what we talked about last week, is kind of like using those red moments as a clue, as a way to reflect and grow, kind of learning those responses that your body has so that you can recognize it as red and then move into your plan for how to deal with that. That's really helpful. The next thing she talks about is breathing. And I feel like we've talked about this a lot, but one thing that was so helpful in this section that I thought was so important was practicing breathing when you are in green brain. And I remember the first time I heard the concept, someone told you to practice breathing. And I thought, well, that's absurd. I breathe all the time. Why do I have to practice breathing?
Yeah.
But if you think about the sort of normal breaths that every human pretty much takes, they're often very short breaths. We often breathe into our chest, and they're often kind of quicker pace breaths. And these breaths that she's talking about in this pause to breathe they have to be very deep breaths. They have to be breaths where you breathe into your stomach. You don't actually breathe into your stomach, but your stomach, your diaphragm is expanding in a way that makes your stomach look like it's expanding, even though air is actually going into your lungs. And they have to be very slow breaths. And it does take practice to teach yourself to breathe that way. And those are actually the breaths that are going to help your brain know it's okay to calm down. You're safe. This situation is under control. Because when you're in red brain, your brain is sending an alarm. Something's not safe. We're out of control. You know, we have to keep ourselves safe. And so it's actually that deep breath is what helps your brain realize, oh, no, wait, actually, we can handle this. Everything's okay. We can take some time to respond. And it really does take practice to teach yourself to breathe that way. And so I have had to practice, like I try to practice in the morning, like when I first get up, I take a few really big, deep breaths. Like putting my hand on my stomach so that I can make sure that my stomach, my diaphragm is expanding and my stomach is going out as I take a breath. I do it in the evening. So I do it when I'm not in red brain. And it's almost like practicing like a free throw or practicing like a kick in football. You know, like if you do it over and over and over, then when you need that skill, it will be there. And I have found that really, really helpful. So practicing breathing when you're in green, so that when that moment comes and you're in a red situation, that skill is there to reach for, and you can take that big breath that will help your brain calm down. She talks about using a green plan. And it's interesting because she makes it clear that this green plan is going to look different for everyone. Everyone has a different way to get from red to green. And it looks different for every adult. It looks different for every child. And so a lot of this is trial and error. Like, how do I, as an individual, get myself from red to green? And so I was going to ask, like, what's your green plan? Like, what's helpful for you to get you from red to green?
Yeah. So one of the things is what you just talked about was taking a deep breath. Mm-hmm. Is one of the ways that I can work towards diffusing my red, mm-hmm. Moving towards red really quickly is just taking a really deep breath. And what it feels like for me is I'm kind of breathing out the tension mm-hmm. in my body mm-hmm. to really allow myself to think and engage in the situation, which usually means I'm better able to ask questions mm-hmm. to understand like what's been going on rather than make assumptions mm-hmm. that I know what's happened. So that's definitely one. Another one is doing something physical in terms of exercise, not necessarily running or anything like that, but I'll go for a walk. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we can do because you and I are home, we're both available, and so this may not be something that everybody can do, is like leave the house and go for a walk, but mm-hmm. I would say, you know, once again, if that's something that's helpful, it's like a physical exercise, then can you go up and down your stairs? Can you pace in the kitchen? Can you do something that gives your body some input to help you move towards green brain? Mm-hmm. And walking's been really helpful for me. I think it's the impact of my feet on the ground mm-hmm. helps to kind of ground me and reorient me towards green. Mm-hmm. And that's been something that's been really helpful for me to do so that I can get myself back in green.
Yeah, that's really helpful. And thinking about the fact that it's different for everyone, you know, we have one kiddo who, when they're in red, the best thing that they can do is go listen to music. Like mm-hmm. music, there's something about it that just helps them process through whatever feelings they're feeling and helps them get back to green. I think that one thing that I often do when I'm feeling red is I will, I know I have to move, but sometimes I don't have the option of going for a walk because I'm here by myself. Yeah. And so I'll hop from foot to foot, or I'll kind of like just shake out my whole body, just like my arms and legs, and just like wiggle as much as I can. Because red brain, like if you think about what's happening in your body, like often cortisol is being released, often adrenaline is being released. Like these are powerful hormones that give your body a lot of energy. Mm-hmm. And so your body needs to do something with that energy. Mm-hmm. It has to use it somehow. And so for you going for a walk, that makes a lot of sense to me, because it, your body is using the energy. For our kiddo that listens to music, like they're bobbing and weaving and dancing around as they're listening to the music. And I can see how that is using that energy. And then for me, kind of like wiggling or shaking or hopping, again, like it's just something that kind of uses up that energy. And, you know, I mean, it just can look so many different ways. You know, for some kiddos, you know, they need to do something that's kind of rhythmic. And so like swinging or bouncing on a trampoline, you know, kind of up and down and up and down. And so there's just really so many different things that people can do, adults and children, mm-hmm. to get them from red to green. And so it's really about when you're in a green space, saying like, okay, what actually helps me? Like, what can I do when I'm in this space to help me get to green? Like making that plan before you're mm-hmm. in red, mm-hmm. so that you know, okay, when I get to this spot, this is what I'm going to try. Mm-hmm. And even, again, practicing that beforehand so that when you get there, you know, okay, this is what I'm going to try to do. And it is a lot of trial and error. And mm-hmm. it is a lot of, okay, that didn't work. Let me try something else. And so that's that reflection again. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, in those red moments, I'm reflecting back on that red moment. What could I have done differently? Like, how could I plan for those times in a way that might make them a little bit safer mm-hmm. in the future. And then the last thing kind of on her list is to simplify your life and redefine success. And I was going to see if you could simplify your life. Like what does that look like for you to just kind of simplify, like make things a little bit more, you know, kind of streamlined or straightforward in your life?
I'm a person of routine. I really thrive on routine and order, mm-hmm. and that's something that I need. And mm-hmm. so it's kind of being knowing what I do need mm-hmm. in that. So, for instance, I wake up in the morning and I go make myself a coffee. And if I don't do that, then it feels really strange to me and kind of starts my day off in a very odd way that feels unsettling to me. Mm-hmm. And so I think that simplifying your life is have a routine. Like mm-hmm. that's really helpful because it makes things feel more normal mm-hmm. and you more ready to recognize when things are abnormal or things are off. And so I think that that's a really, in some ways, a really simple thing, but it's also to recognize its importance for you mm-hmm. in terms of how do I work through things? How do I get through things? What helps me to feel that I'm in a good place and I'm in green and I'm ready for the day or the situation? And so I really have learned some of this from you. Mm-hmm. So I think that you do something that's really great.
Yeah. So this, I totally stole this from a friend. I have just a really good friend who's just really, really wise. And she has this thing that she calls Monday uniform. And what it is she just wears the same thing every Monday so that she doesn't have to think about it. She talks about how a lot of times we get decision fatigue. So particularly people who are special needs parents, she's a special needs parent. You and I are special needs parents. But, you know, this happens for anyone whose lives, you know, are read for different for different reasons. But often when you're living in a red situation, that can lead to decision fatigue. Like, you just can't make any more decisions. I'm so tired of trying to decide even simple things. And so her very wise advice is just to have a uniform. Every Monday, I wear the same thing. And so that way, it's not a decision I have to make, because I know that when I wake up on Monday morning, I'm going to put these clothes on and I wear it every Monday. It's so helpful for me to have like a uniform, like this is what I'm going to wear. I don't have to decide because I've already made that decision. For me, it also looks like meal planning. So we have tacos every Tuesday. I don't have to think about it. I don't have to think about what I'm going to make on Tuesday. I don't have to think about what I'm going to buy at the grocery store for that Tuesday meal. I know we're having tacos. I know I'm going to get taco stuff. So just little things to kind of simplify your life. What are some decisions you can make ahead of time and just say, okay, I'm going to decide to do this every day or every certain day of the week, so that you kind of eliminate, you know, decisions you're having to make day to day. So that's one example that I've used that's just been really helpful. And then kind of in this, she also talks about redefining success. And I thought that this was so interesting, and I really had to kind of ponder, like, what do I see as success in parenting? Like, what does that look like? Yeah, did you have any thoughts on that section?
Yeah, it's funny, as we were getting ready to do this, you kind of asked me this question. I had to think about it because I kind of realized, I don't know if I always have a goal that I'm going for outside of resolving whatever the specific situation is that's going on. But then thinking in a more broad terms, what do I actually want for my kids? I was like, that's something that requires more thought. It requires a bigger thing. But I also realize it requires a whole lot more, I think, discernment on what is actually really important for your child, especially when there's so many voices out there telling you that this is what success looks like and this is what you need to do and this is the only way to do it. And especially when we look at our own family, where we have just a really diverse group of children, mm-hmm. none of them are really the same, mm-hmm. is it makes you realize that success can't look like a specific job type. It can't mm-hmm. look like a certain type of education. It mm-hmm. can't look like a lot of things that we hear mm-hmm. as this is what success looks like. And so I think that one of the goals that I want for our kids is to be relationally competent, that they understand their own emotions, how that works, and then also then how does that work in terms of relationships with other people? Because mm-hmm. everything that we do really as human beings mm-hmm. involves other people at some level. And so the better that we can understand how we interact and engage with other people, I think the more successful they're going to be in life in whatever it is that they're doing. If that's being a parent, being a friend, being a worker, mm-hmm. Being a student, in all of those things, like the one thing I feel like that is the same in them is that you're going to have relationships with people. And in some ways, it doesn't matter what the other variables are. How you interact with them is most important. And so I think that's one of the things that I look at as what does success look like? Yeah. It's that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting because if when you do define success that way, all of a sudden, it kind of requires a shift in the way you spend your time and the way you spend your energy and like what you're working towards, you know, because when you define success as like a certain level of education or a certain achievement or a certain, job aspiration or whatever, that kind of dictates a different way to spend your time and energy, versus defining success as like, okay, understanding like how to have healthy relationships, being relationally connected in our family relationships, and then that kind of flowing out into relationships throughout their lives. Okay, well then that requires a different way for me to spend my time and energy, because that means that my time needs to be spent like connecting relationally and helping them to learn how to connect relationally with others. So it is just a really big mindset shift, and especially in Western culture, it is really different than a lot of what our culture has kind of like taught about what success looks like in life in general, but then specifically in parenting. So it does require some kind of like undoing of what our culture teaches and shows, and then also some kind of reassessing of our own lives and like how we have to kind of reallocate our time and energy to spend it investing in what we think success looks like.
Yeah. I think the other thing in that I think we've had to recognize in our own lives, but especially as parents, is oftentimes we have a really big goal and we feel like the only way to really celebrate and feel like we've reached that milestone and been successful is when we get to that big goal. Mm-hmm. But what we forget about is there might be a thousand small steps towards that goal. Mm-hmm. And so it's right to recognize and see those steps as success.
Yeah.
And so if this is all a journey to get to that end, then we know that there's going to be ups and downs. Mm-hmm. And if we have that expectation that that's the case, then when we have the ups, we say, oh man, that was really great. Mm-hmm. I'm so thankful for that. You handled that situation so well. Mm-hmm. We do those things, not because we've reached the ultimate goal, but because we know that we're on the right path mm-hmm. to getting there. And this made me think a lot about when, as a teacher, I taught mathematics, is that we know when you learn or you're learning math, you don't start out knowing how to do algebra.
Yeah.
You have to learn a lot of other little steps to eventually get you to understand how to do algebra. Yeah. And so therefore we celebrate learning how to add, learning to recognize numbers. Mm-hmm. Those are all things that you have to do before you get to that goal. Mm-hmm. I think in parenting, a lot of times is we want to get to the end. Mm-hmm. And the reality is we've got a lot of little steps. And so recognize those little steps, celebrate those little steps. And that's a huge encouragement to move towards the goal, because you are seeing progress, and you're also able to address things that maybe need to be addressed along the way that help you move there as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so helpful. I think one of the things that has helped my parenting the most is taking the long view, mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. realizing like this is a journey. We're not going to get there overnight. It's going to change along the way because I'm going to change and because my children are going to change. And so, taking it step by step, recognizing, okay, this small step that we took is something to be celebrated and thankful for. And then this small misstep that we took, like this small stumble that we had, is not something to catastrophize mm-hmm. over or yeah. like lament, like this, it's always going to be this way. And, you know, this child will never learn this, or I'll never learn this. You know, mm-hmm. it was like, okay, mm-hmm. we stumbled. That was a little misstep. We can learn from it and mm-hmm. we can keep going. But I feel like when you know, you do have a big goal, you do have a way you define success, but then that idea of like taking the journey and little by little is so helpful. It's what keeps you going.
Yeah.
So then she moves into this section called facing the red. So this is when you're in the middle of like a red situation. And she talks about it as a firefighter. Like a firefighter comes to a fire with certain tools, like kind of prepared for different things. And we're not going to talk about all of them, but one of them that stuck out to me straight away was the first one is she talks about expecting the fires to happen. Mm-hmm. Like a firefighter is never surprised when he gets there and, oh, there's a fire. Like mm-hmm. that's what he was expecting. That's what she was expecting. Like the firefighter goes and approaches a situation knowing that there's going to be a fire. And that was so helpful for me. Like, I feel like, especially early on in parenting, I was so surprised by red moments, like big blow ups. And like, we're like, whoa, what's happening? You know, whereas now I understand, like, this is just part of life. Mm-hmm. Like every human being at a different times in life is going to respond in a red way. Like is going to go to red brain sometimes. That's just going to happen. And so when we expect it, when we don't look at a red brain situation as, oh my gosh, this is so shocking, and instead look at a red brain situation, it's like, yeah, this is normal. This happens to human beings everywhere, all over the world, all the time. It all of a sudden it makes it, it kind of changes your approach to it. You change it from, what's happening? You know, I can't believe this, to, oh, okay, I expected this. Maybe not in this specific situation at this moment did I expect it, but like this, what is happening is normal because everyone goes to red brain sometimes. You expect it to happen, and so you are more prepared for the fact that it will happen. And because you've kind of gone through the steps of like knowing how to get yourself to green and knowing how to stay in green, like we just talked about, you're ready for it. So that was one of the things that stuck out to me. Was there one of the things that kind of approaching the fire, like that kind of firefighter mindset of approaching the fire, was there anything that stuck out to you?
Yeah, it was arm yourself. And we've kind of talked about this in a previous podcast as well, is like understanding the uniqueness of yourself as well as whatever children you're parenting. But I feel like this is so important because the reality is all everyone is unique. And so understanding and preparing in regards to that specific child's strengths and weaknesses, past history, mm-hmm. things that you know about them, mm-hmm. is so helpful, because then you're not just putting down a general thing. You're able to actually be more specific in how you're addressing them. And then also, if I know, it's helped me a lot in terms of there sometimes are behaviors that my children will do that are more likely to push me into red. And so if I know that those things are going to happen, it allows me to prepare myself better to actually engage in parenting conversations and things, so that I'm actually not going to get pulled in to moving towards red really quickly, because I know what they're doing. And I'm also not asking my kids to do something that they're not able to do. And so it's a work in progress. But I think the more that we can come back and evaluate afterwards, mm-hmm. really allows us then to see some of the patterns and responses, not only that we make, but that our kids make, so that the next time we're better able to come into the situation ready for the discussion and talk that we need to have about whatever's been going on.
Yeah, that's really helpful. The other thing that kind of stuck out to me from this section was, and this is really for people of faith. You and I share the same faith. And I know that not everyone that listens to this podcast is a person of faith, but for those who are, you know, there was one kind of line in there where she talks about how prayer is powerful. And we've really found that to be true, especially as our children get older. I've found myself praying for them more and more, and you and I praying for them together. Mm-hmm. And so for people who are people of faith, like, I do want to encourage prayer as like a really powerful parenting tool, because we found that to be really helpful mm-hmm. in our kind of posture towards our children. Mm-hmm. But then we've also seen it be really effective in their lives to pray for them. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to encourage, you know, people who are listening or people of faith, you know, prayer is powerful. Yeah, I think we're going to stop there. There's so much more in this chapter that we could talk about. I just felt like I wanted to talk about the whole thing. But yeah, there is more, but we're going to stop there. Thank you so much for joining us. And yeah, we will be back next week to talk about chapter 7. So I hope that you will join us then. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Stoplight Approach podcast. Please share, subscribe, rate, and review this podcast, as it will help other people to find us. The Stoplight Approach offers many resources to help families, schools, churches, and other groups to grow in their understanding of the brain and relationships. Please visit www.thestoplightapproach.org.